Welcome to E-Commerce Matters. E-Commerce Matters is the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast brought to you by Black Curve. Each episode explores how retailers can better understand competitor pricing and use pricing insights to improve online visibility and checkout conversion. This is episode 48, entitled Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About RRP, that's Retail Recommended Price. I'm Philip Huthwaite, founder and CEO at Black Curve. I'm joined as ever by Dr. Rob Horton, Chief Product Officer at Black Curve. Let's get pricing. Now, RRP, Rob, welcome. It's a very sexy topic, I'm sure you'll agree.
Yep.
The excitement. I can hear the excitement. Now, it's often ignored by retailers. So listeners, stick with us. It's often ignored by retailers. And you know, a lot of the time we're focused on, what's our competitive strategy? Or we get absorbed by tactical pricing, and we get absorbed by what psychological pricing techniques can I adopt? And, you know, even more recently, we've done podcasts and blog posts around price elasticity. Now, you know, you forgive me, and I'm not putting words into your mouths, Rob, or our listeners, but right. RRP is not often, you know, a topic that takes up a lot of our energy and mind when we're talking about pricing, because it sometimes can be considered one of those, you know, fairly mundane price points that is almost, oh goodness me, we've been given this by the supplier, but by and large, I'm going to go and do my own thing. But really, what I wanted to the topic today was just to reconfirm what retail recommended price is, and just convey that it does actually have a role in a retailer's pricing strategy. And actually, you know, without giving the game away, sort of knowing some of the rules and the legalities around how you should and shouldn't use RRP in your promotional pricing strategy, I think will be really beneficial to the listeners. So I hope you're more excited, Rob, than you were when I shared the topic before.
No. It's like I spend a lot of my time working with RRP because I view it as like the foundation. I will get into this later, but like, it's the kind of questions like, what do I do? How do I price a product, right? Like, if I've got no information, what do I use? What should my baseline be? Where should I start for a new product? What do I, all those kind of questions are kind of underpinned by RRP. So it is super useful and super important.
Fantastic. So in terms of today, we're going to discover the meaning and significance of retail recommended price, and then we're going to convey how it can be used in, or the role of it in, an e-commerce company's pricing strategy. So with that, let's start at the very beginning. Where was that start at the very beginning? Is that a Sound of Music quote, or have I lost you completely, Rob?
I have no idea, mate, but I'm guessing it's kids related if you know it and I don't.
I'm pretty sure it's Sound of Music. So, but anyway, which is quite old school. You should know that reference, but I'll let you off.
I don't think that's Sound of Music.
Well, we'll answer it afterwards.
How about that? Listeners, comment. Who's right?
So, what is a retail recommended price, or RRP for short?
It's quite straightforward. It's at least the definition is anyway, it's the price set by the supplier as recommended, as a recommendation to the retailer. So, it's really kind of just what it sounds like, a recommendation. People often try and enforce it, but, I don't think that's legal, is it really? It's kind of price fixing.
You cannot categorically, certainly in UK law, enforce a retail recommended price. It is just what it says on the tin, a recommendation. We often see, you know, anecdotally, and we'll maybe touch upon this later, of e-commerce companies, customers are saying, I've got to price this at the retail recommended price because the supplier will withdraw the supply of products to me. But that is absolutely against the law. You can't do that. And we'll touch upon that in a bit more detail. But it is a recommendation. That's all it is.
And I think that's like really the key difference from the kind of American equivalent in terms of like MAP pricing or minimum advertised pricing. Because that is like, that is legally enforceable, isn't it? Whereas an RRP isn't, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in the US, they have something which is called MAP pricing or minimum advertising price, which is basically them saying you cannot go below this price. It's the minimum price that you can advertise or sell this product at. Now, that is legal because it falls under federal antitrust law, and you know, obviously there's different policies for different states, and I'm not a solicitor, so I don't want to get myself too tied up in knots, but essentially, you know, that is legally enforceable by the suppliers, that if you sell below what they're telling you is the minimum advertising price, you can be sued, you can be told off, they can withdraw products from you. Whereas in the UK and actually in the EU, you can't do that. There's no such thing.
Yeah. I guess to like illustrate the difference between those, how you'd use those two different data points in Black Curve, a MAP price would effectively form your minimum price that we'd put in as a safeguard. So you'd be saying, all right, whenever I'm using automatic rules or whatever, this price cannot go below this price. Whereas we'd use an RRP more as a starting price and say, okay, start my price estimate and RRP and then go and see if I find any competitors or do some price elasticity calculations or whatever. But it provides more of a starting point and the other one provides a finishing point, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, as in the US, that finishing point is gospel because that's legally enforceable. Whereas you know, retailers we work with will typically set that minimum price as their own calculation, their own safeguard, because they want to protect their margin. But you know, they can go below that price because they can do, you know, effectively whatever they want within the constraints of obviously competition law, and we'll go into that in a bit more detail. But you know, just to hammer home, you know, in the UK and in the EU, having a minimum price, you know, would be an infringement on competition law. You know, I hope I'm not opening too much of a can of worms, and I suggest we probably don't go too much into it. But you do sort of think, you know, with the USA being kind of the land of the free and equivalent, you know, they would probably thrive on this capitalist tendency.
Yeah, not starting on.
whereas there seems to be lots of rules
and free and market enforcement in the US. I could pull your ear off about that, but
we'll save that for episode 49, shall we? So I think we've covered what is the retail recommended price. Just to confirm, it is simply a recommendation from the supplier. And sometimes we get asked, what is the difference between retail recommended price and a manufactured recommended price? And just to confirm, they're exactly the same thing. You know, they're used interchangeably, but the manufacturer, you know, of both of those has no legal power to enforce this recommendation. And certainly in the UK, that comes under the Competition Act of 1998. And you know, don't bow down to pressure from your supplier. You've got to stand up to them, and we'll go into that in a bit more detail.
So, I guess within reason.
absolutely. But you know, there's a time and a place of how these relationships are forged. So why is retail recommended price important to know? You know, why do you recommend, Rob, that retailers take note of RRP and have it in their data set?
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of there provided as I mentioned, as a starting point for price to let people standardize it across the board, because it it's kind of saying that once we've include the supplier is basically saying, once we've included all our cost base and added a decent margin in, and obviously you'll know the actual cost that you're getting it from the supplier as well, that will say this is the price we suggest you sell it at. And that means kind of everyone's in the starting from the same point, I guess. It's like standardized across the board. And this is, I guess it's interesting in a digital world, actually, but maybe we'll get onto that later. But this originally comes from people or suppliers not wanting to get their products priced wildly differently from store to store. So say I've got a shop, you've got a shop, you're selling, let's say RRP, and I'm selling a half of RRP because no one's told us otherwise. Customers are going to get upset with the supplier. They're going to get upset with your more expensive shop, et cetera, et cetera. So that's important because it can impact kind of brand damage, I guess. And then also, if you get into the more luxury goods space, it's important for like a brand and reputation kind of, not just in luxury, but I guess across the board. If you want, this is a premium product, right? So we recommend you selling at this because you should be positioning this product as more expensive than this other product, usually because it's what I mentioned earlier, the cost base is high because it's higher quality, it's more reliable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So really, really what it does is it just allows the market to have a starting point and it allows suppliers to kind of standardize pricing to some degree across them.
Yeah, I think that's hit the nail on the head. And I mean, let's be honest, a retailer has got, you know, it's common for retailers to have thousands and thousands of products in their inventory, right? They're not going to know every single product intimately, although I have to say, having conversations with a lot of retailers, their ability to remember product codes and price history and who the different competitors are and all the information about it always astounds me. So I'm always very impressed by that. But if you're regularly launching products, just having to go through the exercise of, oh, I've just got this new Dyson. I'm stealing your examples now, aren't I, Rob? I've got this new yeah. Dyson that's just come out. Like, it's a DX7 animal Hoover. Goodness me, what do I price it at? Okay, I bought it at this. I want to make 30% margin. Let's go with that. That's not
what have I become? I almost kind of bitten and corrected you on the SKU code for
I did make that one up, so don't worry. I know. Don't worry. But you know, hang on a minute.
SKU codes don't start with DX.
Oh dear, we're so cool, aren't we? That we know the codes for Dyson Hoovers. But what I'm trying to say is that it just takes that initial pain and that initial thought process away and does offer that guide, that starting point for the retailer. So it means that at launch, you know, not only does the supplier know that there's going to be some consistency for their own products, which gives them that brand protection, because hopefully a lot of retailers at launch, whilst they can't enforce it, typically, you know, when new products are launched, they do generally sort of start around the retail recommended price, right? I mean, it also takes away the thought process, that extra decision that the retailer has to do at launch. And also, you know, I mentioned that use case of, oh, well, we need to make a 30% margin, right? Sometimes, especially new products, and in the last podcast, we mentioned, you know, the Apple headset and the VR headset. Typically, the suppliers have spent lots and lots of money doing market research and understanding the true value of their own product in the marketplace. And therefore, if you use the retail recommended price, especially on launch, it's likely that you would achieve a lot higher price than simply applying an arbitrary 30% markup on what I've bought it at. So you've by using the retail recommended price, you've unlocked value-based pricing without you even knowing about it. So it means that you can typically extract a greater revenue and therefore achieve a higher profit margin on the sale of those products, certainly initially.
Yeah, I mean, I think that point's really important, right? Especially with new products, because often there's a lot of excitement around them for whatever reason. So you should be able to like maintain a higher price point than you would otherwise. So the true kind of market driven price 6 months a year down the line might be a lot lower, but at least starting at kind of RRP, which can often be around 100% markup, I think, means that in that initial period, you just harvest a lot more margin than you would otherwise. So that's great, right?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Rob. And we've mentioned that RRP is typically used on first launch. And then what we haven't actually teased out, and we'll go on to this in a bit more detail around the rules of RRP pricing, is that retailers use it to then start to demonstrate discounts against a previous price or a recommended price. And this is used generally to encourage sales, because everyone likes a discount, right? Everybody likes a promotion. Well, I mean, I'm sure, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some people out there that don't, but I'm sure I'm speaking for the majority of people that
they're listening to the wrong podcast. Well, actually, maybe they're listening to the right podcast, because I imagine most people selling products don't like a promotion in quite the same way.
And so, I guess just to confirm, you know, because I think this is an important point: do retailers have to sell at RRP? And we've mentioned that it's a recommendation, and we've mentioned instances whereby suppliers have told us that we need to update a pricing rule because their supplier has threatened to withdraw the supply of products unless they advertise at a certain price. Now, that is absolutely illegal. So they cannot do that. And I know that there are relationships, and I know that there's certainly a reliance in on suppliers, especially if they're a major source of your revenue, right? And it's going to be quite difficult to almost dob on them to the Competition and Markets Authority. But I would encourage you to, in the first instance, to communicate back to them that you know that practice is illegal, and you know, is the person communicating that to you? Are they aware of that process? Because sometimes it can be junior members of staff that are flying by the seat of their pants and are maybe doing things that they didn't know what was an illegal practice. So I'd always encourage sort of a frank, friendly, open conversation just to make them aware of that. And then typically, again, anecdotally, that we get told is that the suppliers are saying this verbally to the retailer, okay, and are trying to not get this documented and not get this written down. But I mean, typically these days, conversations are done over Zoom, and typically these days, you know, goodness me, a lot of retailers don't sometimes even talk to their suppliers. It's all done over email. And so if this becomes a big issue, you know, don't be afraid to take a, I hope I'm not getting myself into too much hot water here, but don't be afraid to take a copy of it, take a snapshot of it, and go and seek some legal advice from your solicitor.
I think this is a really hard one, though. Like, sure, if you're big enough to kind of weather that storm, but it's really hard, right? It's in the same way of trying to kind of, if the supply is big enough and you're small enough, how you're never going to kind of win that legal battle unless you get a group of you acting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a David and Goliath type piece, but yeah. But I mean, you'd be surprised at the forums that even the smaller retailers are involved in. Typically, they might be involved in buying groups, or, you know, you attend events and you start to talk and you can start to build up a picture. You know, are you being forced to do this?
Anecdotally, from my experience, the suppliers are less doing this from a form of, price fixing, but are more doing it when it's usually when someone's pricing has gone quite wrong.
Yeah, I guess brand protection perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I, you are, there are absolutely, but I guess I'm just, it's, you know, we have had people say to this categorically, you know, in a conversation that this is what's happened. And so I just always make sure that you seek legal advice and go through the steps. Don't just assume, oh, they're a big retailer, so, you know, I'm not going to bother. Always seek appropriate advice in this instance, because it is illegal being told that you shouldn't advertise at that you have to advertise at retail recommended price in the UK. So do go and speak to a solicitor, and then they can advise you on your options. Okay. Again, my advice is just a guide versus your advice.
I am not a lawyer.
Yeah. Yes. So go and talk, but do you know, you're not going to be able to do anything with it unless you have factual hardcore evidence. So go and talk to other retailers. Go and find out if this is common practice and seek legal advice. But I'm always standing up for the little person, and maybe I love too much of a fight. So that's maybe why I might be a bit biased. But just to reiterate, if you haven't got it already, it is illegal to enforce a retail recommended price.
I just think I'm more used to seeing people's pricing algorithms go wrong.
That's true. Maybe that's the case.
Or someone fat thumbing it. Not us, but maybe. I think I told the Argos story on a... I'll say Argos and hit a big enough. They can take it on another one of our podcasts, where someone clearly fat fingered a spreadsheet and the whole market was just following it up and down and up and down and up and down. So yeah, I think at that point, if I was a supplier, I'd be going in and saying, guys, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, but I think in that instance, the supplier probably does have the right to pick up the phone and go, hang on a minute, guys, you do realise that you're massively undercutting the RRP price. And oh, hang on, guys, do you realise that you're massively over the RRP price? So
I think, do you want?
So I think it might be, I recommend that you might want to look at that. I think that conversation is certainly you're allowed to do that. So, I mean, I think it's probably worth going into looking at some of the rules around RRP pricing. And it's probably actually... when I mention RRP pricing, it's more how it's used in a promotional context, and things to be aware of. So, you know, sometimes you'll see companies offering a huge discount from a retail recommended price. Now, this is called comparative pricing, and things like retail recommended price, £300 down to £100 online, or I don't know, originally £500, now £250, right? And this is called, called comparative pricing, and another term for it might be your price anchoring. You could consider this also psychological pricing, because you're trying to tap into the consumer's desire for a bargain and tap into those consumers that wouldn't have purchased that product at the higher price, and are therefore going to now, or almost they were interested but it was too expensive, and you're now encouraging them to make that purchase.
Yeah, it's classic anchoring, isn't it? Thinking about it, it's the true value of this is X or 500, say, but we're going to give it to you today for 250. So you're like, oh wow, I'm getting serious amount of value for discount here. And that's used not just in e-commerce, but I was looking at a product page on it today in terms of kind of sales and how to get people buying your apps. And it's interesting, it really works. So from a retailer perspective, if you're doing that within the bounds of the law, it's a really, really powerful thing to do.
And now, that is absolutely legal, not illegal. You are absolutely legally allowed to show a discount from the retail recommended price. But the key is that you can't be misleading, because otherwise you'll not only be in trouble from, you know, the competition, Market and Competition Bureau or agency, yeah, or whatever they've been rebranded as these days, but also, you know, likely the Advertising Standard Agency, the ASA, is probably going to come knocking on your door if it's misleading. So what we mean by that,
or even worse nowadays, which.com or
yes
if I'm looking at you, Tesco Club Card.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, I love that article, actually. It was that certainly, let's not show the, what was it? Does not show the price per 100 grams or something on the Tesco Club Cards. D- discount. So you felt like you were getting a discount, but it was actually cheaper to buy a product that wasn't.
I will
the club
say is they probably only if you want the larger bottle of ketchup to begin with.
Yeah, it wouldn't fit in most people's cupboards. To be fair,
I mean that's part of the problem. It's like, oh yeah, get a Costco and get 10 liters.
I almost want to see you pick up a 10 liter. I don't know if they sell it in 10 liters, but pick up a 10 liter bottle of ketchup.
I'm not sure. What's that? 10 kilograms in it? I could do that.
Yeah. It's just on your chips. Like, imagine pulling that out of your pocket.
the amount we get through ketchup and mayo in this house is probably would be a sensible purchase.
So to come back on track, though, I think without us to go too much into our ketchup stories, what I mean by misleading is you can't just for 10 minutes advertise for £500 and then immediately put the price down to £250. Okay, there used to be I can't remember the exact year, but there used to be a law that you had to advertise a price for 28 days then you could advertise a discount, whereas actually they've been that because it was deemed you were too many loopholes in it, so and people were taking too much advantage. Yeah, that's it. We're absolutely not mentioning DFS here, right? But but really,
not
other sofa retailers were guilty as well, as sure as other no other suppliers.
The great thing about DFS is that I think they're the only sofa retailer.
Yeah, they're still around probably because they've done such a good discounting strategy. Yeah, they just had one sofa, didn't they, in one of their stores for 30 days, and then it meant that everybody else they could advertise that sofa as a discount from it. So, but really, the law is
allegedly
yes. Thank you for saving me there. Allegedly, but really the law is around just making sure that it's been advertised at that price for the equivalent period of time. So, you know, if you're going to advertise it as a discount for 30 days, you've got to make sure that it's appeared at, you know, let's take the example. If you're going to advertise it as 50% off, £250, for 30 days, you've got to make sure that it's been at £500 for 30 days as well. And then that means that if you're doing, I guess, more of a high-low strategy, so you're having it 1 month high, 1 month down, 1 month high, 1 month down, you can do that. That's not a problem. But you've just got to make sure that you're doing it for the equivalent period of time. But now you can't artificially inflate prices as well. So you can't just, you know, and I guess it's the same sort of thing. You can't just suddenly put a price at slightly higher for 2 days and then discount it again. That's an absolute no-no. There are a few instances of this happening. You've got the likes of Carpet Right and Simba Sleep. So if you want to look up the papers, the Simba one was in 2022. And the Carpet Right case of I think it was called Half Price was the case.
I probably shouldn't shill for these mattress companies, but all that aside, I would say those mattresses that arrive in the post are amazing value compared to buying them from a shop.
Well, I still don't know how they fold them up. I mean, surely that's not.
I'll send you a video. I got one. They're vac packed, so there's no air in it. And then you open it up and try not to slash the mattress when you're doing it. And then you just leave it and it's foam and it expands. We got a Casper one before they stopped selling them in the UK, but it's probably my favorite thing I own. It's so good.
I'll look forward to next week when I'm in the office. You can show me that video. Definitely.
Well, unless you're coming to a Greek island next week,
that's me. Yeah, well, I'll happily put that on expenses. That's fine. So in terms of
just wandering across the beach, out there.
Well, I did bump into you on your stag do, didn't I? We were both in Prague.
Oh, yeah, my brother's stag do. We met on the famous bridge in Prague,
and we hadn't actually organised to do that. We did know we were both in the same location, though, to be fair, but of all the places, there you go. It's still one of those sliding door moments, sort of. In terms of, you know, what else? I mean, really, it's a misleading is just making sure that you are being open and honest about your discount. So if you're using RRP as the discount, make sure that you say RRP against it and show that it's a 50% off. We often see retailers that explicitly go into a bit more detail than that because they don't want to become unstuck. So they might put in the dates that the RRP was listed, okay? And that, you know, we do actually encourage you to do that, because the more information you're giving to the consumer for them to determine, hang on a minute, is this a real discount from retail recommended price, or is this some artificially random made up RRP or made up starting price, the better. And also it means that you're unlikely to be told off by the ASA, because the more information you can give to the consumer, the better. I mean, if you've been in the tube, the underground or a bus, and you've seen things that are advertised as discount, you know, try and read the small print and you'll generally see, you know, things around dates and when they were listed. So that's what we mean. It's giving the consumer enough information as possible to make sure that that they can decide whether or not it's a true discount. And that's really it. That if you make sure you give people the right information, you're not going to fall foul. You're not going to get in
trouble. It's a really, we probably don't want to open this can of worms because I don't know enough, but it's if I'm brutally honest, It's a really interesting one when you get into, because obviously RRP is just that, it's a recommended retail price. It's not the true market price. And so if you're displaying RRP whilst having a different price, is that problematic? Who knows, really? I'm not smart enough to go into that. But I think it's like, I think it's worth thinking that, like, RRP isn't the be all and end all. You only really get into trouble when you kind of, like, the say, for example, when you're doing kind of pretty misleading pricing strategies or discounting strategy or advertising strategies, really, rather than just setting a true price in the market and selling that.
Yeah, I mean, just to give some examples. So say if the RRP was £150 and you first then advertised it as a discount after, say, I don't know, 30 days, that it's £75, and you said it was you said it was 50% off RRP, right? And then later on, you then decided to advertise it for £99. You can't then say, oh, it's a discount off RRP, because that wasn't the last price that it was set at. And so that's what we mean, that you can't just use data points that happened a long, long time ago. It's got to be current snapshot in time, and that's why the length of time it's been at versus the length of time that you've recorded the discount is probably quite a useful benchmark, and therefore I would sort of, when you're looking at your promotions, probably erring on the side of caution, I'd make sure that you only really consider price points within the last sort of 60 days or so, just to make sure that you're not going to come unstuck. And I mean, by and large, we'll go into this in a bit more detail in a moment, but by and large, retailers that are following a competitive pricing strategy, you know, you're going to be changing prices all the time, and so therefore, you know, RRP in that instance is typically only useful on kind of day one, so to speak. So
we can have a chat about it in a minute.
Yes, that's true. Actually, I've forgotten a few points, haven't I? So yeah, that's absolutely true. So does RRP include VAT? I'll keep it short and sweet. Yes, it should include VAT, because it's the advertised price. The retail recommended price is the advertised price, and we have to pay value-added tax. You know, you've got a tax man's got to get his cut, hasn't he? I won't open up that. Won't open up that can of worms.
No comment.
Will there be a time to go below RRP? And I've already mentioned this. You know, If you're running a competitive pricing strategy, yes, you're very much likely to spend most of your time below RRP, because, you know, you're competing with other retailers. Other retailers are trying to get market share, and one of the ways they get market share is by lowering the price to encourage sales. And so if you're following competitors and you're using that as the primary data point for your pricing strategy, you're likely to go under RRP. We'll maybe touch upon it now because we spoke about it and I tripped myself up on it. RRP is really useful in a competitive strategy, because there will be times where sometimes all of your competitors go out of stock, right? And if you don't,
exactly, yes,
if you don't have RRP as that data point, your competitors might go out of stock, and you're then stuck at the last price that you had when you match that that whatever that last competitor that was against your pricing strategy, and therefore you're going to keep selling at that price, right? Whereas if you add this pricing rule which says, well, if there are no competitors, let's snap back to retail recommended price, you know, you've got the opportunity there to sell the same, you know, you're likely to sell the same amount of volume, or if it's an in-demand product and you're the only one who's got it, your volume might increase, but you will sell it at a higher price and therefore achieve a higher margin in every single sale. So that's where it does become really useful for even retailers that are running a competitive pricing strategy. And will there be a time to go above RRP, Rob?
Yes. yeah, for sure. The laws of supply and demand still hold, right? It's completely legal to charge more for a product. Really, really good examples of this are kind of limited runs. So if you're in the fashion game, like a sneaker drop or something, right? They might initially RLP for $200, but then be £200, change currency, and be like £1,000, £2,000 in fairly short order down the line, just because they're a fashion item and they're high in demand, and that's fine. That's a market, right? So yeah, again, I think similarly, similarly to the other answer, it's quite short and sweet. But I guess the only addendum to that is, it for kind of most products, the people that we work with sell, that's much less likely to happen. And again, you shouldn't really be engaging in any kind of price fixing or price gouging and all that good stuff, really. But yeah, again, no reason. It's a recommended price.
Yeah, the retailer can do effectively what they want with that price. But I mean, certainly, if it's a well advertised product that is internationally recognized, is available in lots of places, it's likely that the RRP price will be listed in, you know, multiple locations. And therefore, if you have lots of your products and you're selling them above RRP, and it's obvious, because shoppers are shopping around, you know, it only takes a couple of screenshots and a social media wave, and you know, you can cause quite a lot of brand damage in this particular instance.
I think I even have a simpler view than that, to be honest. In this day and age, people just won't buy from you.
Yeah.
Like if you're not price competitive, but you can. I mean, there are like definite strategic reasons for doing things like that, usually at the individual product level rather than at the across your entire product mix, like you were saying. But you might think, well, I know there's limited stock on this, and I'll let everyone else sell out cheaper, and then I'll sell in a bit later. So by pushing your price up to slow the demand for a bit, letting people drop out the market, and then kind of claiming a bit more margin later on is an absolutely fine and legitimate pricing strategy.
So with that, you know, should retail recommended price be used as part of the pricing strategy? I've already mentioned around, you know, in the absence of competitor data, which I think is probably for our listeners is
yeah. So that, I think that's the real key one. For us, so for people, I think I'll just stick in our space to be honest, because it's a pretty broad church. But for people in e-commerce, largely selling branded goods, it's a really, really important foundational pricing rule, because it basically, you use it to answer the question, what should the starting price of this product be? So no other information about the market, no competitor prices, no sales, no nothing. It's starting at RRP or a little bit above or below RRP, depending on how you want to position your brand. Obviously, most people go a little bit below. It's a really good starting point. And you have that as your base rule. And the reason why I picked you up on this earlier, Philip, but the reason why it's it's important to have it all the time is as that almost to act like, yeah, that snapback, like you said. So if competitors drop out of the market, suddenly you're the only people selling it. If you're selling it for cheaper, well, why not go back up to RRP, right? Bring that price back up and then take sales there, because all of a sudden you've got no one to compete with you. So in terms of your everyday pricing strategy, pricing rules, what you're saying is effectively, if there is no other data in the marketplace, base my price off RRP. And that's why it's kind of super important and underpins, well, everything we do here, really.
And just to keep that example going, you mentioned Argos earlier, where, you know, there was a couple of days where the market went a bit bonkers with everyone was following Argos up and then everyone was following Argos down, and mm-hmm. it was almost a bit of a seesaw. Now, if you're running a competitive strategy where that happens and you're just saying, well, I'm going to arbitrarily follow Argos, and you've set your minimum price, so it means that you're not going to go below a certain price. So happy days, I've protected my margin, and you haven't got that upper ceiling. You know, you're going to follow them, and you're going to have stupid prices on your website because of somebody else's mistake. Okay, and you don't want that to happen. So RRP can be used as that price ceiling. I mean, we've done a podcast around pricing mistakes, and I think there was on Amazon there was a book that should have been sold at £9, and because two retailers were on their marketplace were chasing each other, the book suddenly went to 2,000, you know, something like £2,500 or something ridiculous, right? Because they were chasing each other up and up and up because of an algorithm problem. So having this price corridor of not only a minimum price but including RRP will protect you in that instance. So it should absolutely be used in your arsenal, you know. And in this particular instance, it's been used in your pricing strategy as a safeguard. Again, if you're following that competitive pricing strategy. So how does Black Curve help retailers, you know, use retail recommended price as part of their pricing strategy?
So a couple of ways. Well, really in a couple of ways. The first way we've mentioned is about using the pricing rules. When you set the rules up, we use it to do things like set a price ceiling to ensure you don't go too high with your prices, use it to price products when you don't have any data, all that good stuff. And the other way we kind of provide it is in our kind of reports and analytics as a comparison. So for example, when we make a price recommendation, you can view that price against your current price, and you can also view it against RRP. So really, it's kind of for me one of the key foundational data points that underpins all your pricing strategy and insights and analytics, and all available within Black Curve, really.
So in summary, whilst on the surface RRP and retail recommended price can be seen as maybe one of the least sexier parts of pricing, I hope that that you've taken away from our podcast, you know, the fact that it is a very important data point, and it should be used and not forgotten about. Because if it's forgotten about, you know, you've opened yourself up to certainly instances of difficulty, whether it be from a promotional perspective of advertising promotions incorrectly and falling foul of the competition authority and the advertising standards authority. But actually, I think the main one is around making sure that where you are running a competitive pricing strategy, it gives you that ceiling in your pricing rules, especially if you're using automated pricing, to make sure that you're not going to wake up and you're not have priced your product completely stupidly because you're following a competitor who's made their own mistake with their data. The last thing I'll just reiterate, because I've mentioned it enough times already, so I think it's worth that I summarize it, is that it is a recommendation. Okay, it is a recommendation. It's not legally enforceable by your supplier. So it is a recommendation, if I've not said that already. Okay, so
Philip, is there a recommendation?
so treat it as such. And if you do feel that that suppliers are putting pressure on you to use it, please do go and seek the appropriate advice from legal professionals in the instance, because certainly under UK law, it's a big no-no for suppliers to force you to have a particular price point. So with that, it's incredibly useful. Go out there. If you've not got it in your data set, add it to your data set. And if you're not using it in your pricing strategy, add that price ceiling in your pricing rules as well, because that will protect your brand, because you don't want to wake up with a stupid price, do you? Because that's not a good day in the office. So with that, we've been Black Curve. This has been E-commerce Matters, the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast. Until next time, happy pricing.